Hello, welcome to the That Guy's a Maniac podcast with just two regular guys, myself, Gunzy11, aka Farley, and Richie.
Hi, I'm a regular guy.
You're a regular guy. Yeah, us regular guys here at That Guy's a Maniac like video games. Richie, name three video games.
Name three video games. I have the Wayne's World game.
yep.
The Turrican.
The Turrican, yeah.
yeah. And Super Mario Brothers.
Well, there we go, readers. That's just a selection of the great games we talk about here at That Guy's a Maniac, the podcast. And we're not just a podcast, we're also a blog. Very rarely put videos up, sometimes images, and occasionally tweets. You can find all of that stuff at That Guy's a Maniac, or one word or lowercase. and you can find the blog at www.thatguys.co.uk. Today we are talking about more video games for
you. But before that,
I was getting there, don't worry. Before that, Richie, do you want to weirdly introduce this segment?
We do a thing where we say a video game quote to each other and the other person has to guess.
It's our season 3 gimmick, which...
it's infinitely better than any of our other gimmicks, to be
no,
honest.
It's middling.
Middling?
Yeah.
Why?
It's not as bad as the office skit, but it's not as good as the adverts.
The adverts, they just involved a lot of work. Anyway, let's not turn this bit into a bit about reminiscing about bits. Yes, I have a quote for you, Farley, and you have to guess what game it's from. And
I have to.
Yeah, bonus points if you can name the character as well. Okay, are you ready? Ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'm the strongest woman in the world.
I'm the strongest woman in the world. Now, I don't know it or even know anywhere near it. So, it feels like a fighting game thing.
Ooh.
Is that a
fighting game. Yeah,
it's a fighting game.
Whittle it down.
Sounds like a woman is saying it.
Yes, absolutely.
Just some subtleties in the
inflection and how.
I think your pronunciation must be very accurate.
I'm glad you saw the effort. go on.
It sounds like a win quote.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like a classic quote, or is it a quote in a fairly recent game? It has to be yes or no. Is it a quote from a fairly recent game?
I don't know.
Okay. Ooh, he doesn't know. Interesting. I'm gonna go for most obvious, just in case. Is it Chun-Li?
Yes.
Hey.
What game? This is why I don't know. I don't know if she says this in the league.
The Street Fighter the movie video game.
Maybe. It's from Street Fighter 2. It's the victory quote, but she might say that in the later ones as well.
Yeah, does she say in 2 Super Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Turbo?
She probably says it in all of the Street Fighter 2 spin-offs as well. But
there's probably yeah. Some Capcom nerd just raging. No.
Sure, only says in the US version.
Sure, he says it in the Argentinian version reported to the Super Famicom.
But yeah, of course, I have played Street Fighter 4 and Street Fighter 5. I have no recollection of the winning quotes or anything like that. I just thought I would go classic. And yeah, there you go. Well done, Farley. Are you keeping tally?
Thank you. What?
Are you keeping tally?
Oh, no, I'm not. I said, do you think she's the strongest woman in the world?
Oh, right. Oh, Do I think she's the strongest woman in the world? I do not think she's the strongest woman in the world.
Who do you think is the strongest woman in the world?
I don't know. I don't know. I can't think of anything funny right now.
Okay. Name one woman stronger than Chun-Li then.
Lorraine Kelly.
Lorraine Kelly. Beloved TV presenter Lorraine Kelly.
Yes.
Fair enough. Let's go on with the rest of the podcast, I guess.
Yep.
We've got some more getting to know you, getting to know all about you questions.
Okay.
Because we're really bad at answering questions succinctly.
Yes, absolutely. We really, really suck at it. Yep. And we're turning that into a podcast.
We're turning it into 5-7 iterations of what should have been perhaps one podcast.
1 10-minute segment.
Yeah. Welcome to the questions, getting to know you questions season 3. So far, and you can listen to previous podcasts unless we put them out in a funny order, in which case you can't, but you've got this to look forward to. We've asked such questions as, what's a game you like, but a few others did? What was your first game you remember playing? What's the worst game you've ever played? What game would you recommend to somebody to convince them games were good or interesting? And we've got more questions on the way today.
Yes, we do. And I shall use that as a segue to ask the next question. Farley, what game terrified you the most?
Ooh, spooky.
Wow, season 2 throwbacks to the Halloween episode.
Yeah, it was even season 1. Ooh, this is an interesting question. I think this is an interesting question given that I wrote it, because the reason why it's interesting thanks Richie, this is a fucking brilliant question. Whoever submitted this was a genius. It's interesting because there are many different angles to this, and like all kinds of questions about emotions and video games, some emotions are dealt with kind of better or naturally in video games, others less so. So I think quite famously things like funny video games are quite rare, or if they are, you know, you're not kind of rolling around on the floor laughing really.
No.
A funny video, it's more of like a, oh, that's clever.
Yeah, no, I've laughed more at an unintentional glitch than I have actual funny supposed dialogue in a game. So
yes, yeah. Or, you know, laugh your ass off because you're playing couch co-op with a bunch of people and you've done something funny to each other, but not.
Yeah, you've managed to get the golden gun and golden eye and repeatedly killed Richie.
All of that stuff. But I think terror is one that video games can do quite well when it comes to soliciting emotional responses. And there aren't many in my list when I really kind of thought and tried to channel the emotion of terror. I've got some kind of honorable mentions, one of which was Dementium, The Ward, which I think I've mentioned on the podcast before.
I think you have, yeah. Is that sort of a pointy clicky sort of thing, 2D, or is it actually...
No, it's a first-person shooter on the DS.
Oh, DS, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was a sequel to it. And that was quite terrifying because you kind of had to put headphones on. Because you've got your headphones on, because you've got quite small screens, it's quite intense. And so there were a couple of times I had to put it down. But it wasn't psycho scares, I think. It was more, I can hear a grumbly man and he's going to pop out of that cupboard.
Yeah.
And I have to shoot him, kind of thing. So that was in my honorable mentions. And then kind of got three in my top most terrified, and I can't really split them, I guess. One of which is Forbidden Siren, which I think I mentioned before.
Yeah. Again. That's the Parasite Eve, or is that
No, it was. It's. My family got quite into horror games. I guess kind of via Resident Evil and Silent Hill. So for a while we were ordering anyone that kind of came up. So it's Forbidden Siren. It's called Red Rose. It was around that time. And things like the Clock Tower. Is it right? The Clock Tower.
Clock Tower.
All of those kind of, you know, scary looking games. And Forbidden Siren gimmick was set in Japan, and there's kind of zombies. But the gimmick was you could use your, I don't know, psychological powers to tune in to see through the eyes of the enemies.
Oh God.
Yeah, so you'd be creeping. It, first of all, and this kind of typifies all the games on my list, I think, it was brutally, very unforgiving. So, you know, it's not like you could Silent Hill your way through it by you know, smacking them around. Basically, if they got you, you were done. If you're very lucky, you kind of escaped. There's more than one, you were actually done. But the gimmick with the tuning of the eyes was, I mean, you couldn't see through your own eyes. And then it was like, it's kind of like tuning a radio or a TV, if you remember having to tune the TV with a manual dial. And then when you did, you could see through their eyes. And so, you know, sometimes you would see the back of your own head through their eyes, which they were kind of direct behind you. Yeah. So that was one that because it was so hard, didn't get very far. But that was one that, you know, no chance of playing it on my own at night because it's just so fucking scary. Another honourable mention, or not honourable mention, a winner of this category or whatever, and it's not the Oscars, was Zombie U.
Okay.
On the Wii U. Very clever game where you would play through as a character from Sights and Sounds of London, semi-authentic-ish. And then when you died, you'd kind of respawn as a different character. The idea is you've got this overseer prepper guy who's trying to help survivors to, you know, whatever, go through the story, and then you can kind of encounter yourself. And that was, again, quite hard. Zombies. If there's more than one of them, it's quite difficult. But in particular, there's one level where you have to go through a nursery.
Okay.
And the most terrifying bit. Nothing actually happens, you know. It's all in what your mind is expecting. But, you know, there's like bloody handprints all over the walls. When you first go in there, and you go into like this soft play area, and like a rubber ball kind of rolls over your path. You can hear children laughing. And that was, yeah, just genuine terror in having to go down into the basement of this building to get whatever MacGuffin. Yeah, just really, really psychologically got its claws in. And I was so relieved when I finally did that and just never had to go back. And I think I'd be reticent to play that, even though it's a great, great game which I love. I'd be really reticent to play and knowing that level was in there.
Oh.
But like I say, you know, creepy children don't come crawling out the walls. It's all just your mind filling in the blanks. But I think winner chicken dinner might be, actually, no, you go, and then I'll, because it might be one of your ones on your list. I don't think any of those would have been, right? Dimension, Forbidden Siren, or Zombie U?
No, definitely not. I think, right, so there are different types of terrifying games.
Yeah.
So there is the psychological horrors, your Silent Hills, and they can affect you in a very special way, and, you know, that sort of, I want to complete this game, but I don't want to play this game. That kind of terror. Kind of like, oh my God, the world has just turned into rust. Everything wants to kill me. I don't have enough ammo. I don't want to play this game. You know, and you get that same kind of, you get that sort of feeling with Resident Evil 2 as well, the remake, when you sort of come back, or you've done something, like you've given you've turned the square crank and you've opened up the library doors, mm-hmm. you just know, oh god, now that I've done this, there's just gonna be more zombies. Why do we keep doing this? So that kind of fear it's slightly different, but there's also jump scares,
mm-hmm.
Which I think, as cliched as they are, really fucking work. And they do make you terrified of a game, and you do jump. Which I don't know. I think jump scares are more like the short form video version of where Silent Hill would be a movie. Do you know? So they could still tell a story, but it's more of a condensed thing. I think when it comes to jump scares, I definitely want to mention the... Oh my god, I've forgotten the name of the game. Oh my god. It's the one with the canvas. Oh my god.
Amnesia?
No.
It's something like that, isn't it?
Yes. But it's... Sorry, this is really, really annoying. It's just literally blank. It's the one where there's a painting, and you keep coming back to the painting, and the painting takes up more form. The plot unfolds that you may have or may not have killed this person that's in the painting, but in between you've got this madness happening.
Layers of Fear.
Layers of Fear. Thank you very much. but yeah, Layers of Fear is actually quite a short game, but it does everything you want it to be jump scary, or indeed just a scary game. Have you played Layers of Fear?
No, I haven't. I started watching a Let's Play of it, and then I thought, oh, this looks quite good.
Yeah, I would say you don't
so
need
stopped
to watch...
watching a Let's Play of it in order to potentially play it at some point, but I have not.
Yeah, don't do a Let's Play of it. There's no need to do a Let's Play of it, because genuinely you won't get lost. You can't, well, you'll feel like you get lost, but you can't miss an item and have to go back and traipse around that. It's very, very linear, but at the same time doesn't feel linear. And I would say it's definitely worth it just to go through and see those jump scares. One of my favourite memorable moments of that game is right above a door, it says, "Don't turn around." So I'll leave you to find that bit and see how you react.
this is one of the things that I don't think video games do enough of. And there's plenty of, you know, like the demo scene with various horror games, which were all over that, you know, playing with physics and space to do those things. Like, you know, if you quickly turn around, you think you see something in the corner, but then it's not there. They could do so much more than they currently do in that vein. And I remember one of the, what was it? I'm playing through the makers of Sinking City, which I think I mentioned on a few podcasts ago.
Yeah.
They used to make a lot of Sherlock Holmes games, the ones that were kind of semi-decent, the ones, you know, where you explore the Mind Palace to discover clues. But one of their games famously had the creepy Watson in it. So in the Sinking City, there is this Easter egg where there are... old kind of like film posters around, and one of them says, you know, the Creepy Watson. Do you remember Creepy Watson at all?
No, not at all.
Okay, so yeah, Watson would be following you around, as you might expect. there was something about the way they programmed the game, in that if you turned around, he'd always be kind of behind you. So you'd see him in your vision, and then you kind of turn around, and then he'd be also in your vision on the other side. Right,
okay.
And then you turn back, and then he wouldn't be where he was, and you turn around, and he'd be behind you again. So it wasn't supposed to be creepy at all. It was just some way they programmed, like, okay, we don't want Watson getting caught on walls or getting in your way. So, you know, whenever you stop seeing him, he does this. But it it's this well-known, you know, creepy Watson that was doing the rounds as a meme. And that was a great kind of emergent example of how games can really tickle that creepy, like, ugh, with this teleporting Watson. Yeah, and he's just kind of stood behind you looking at you. With a game like God, what was it called? Layers of Fear. Paints. Layers.
Layers of Fear.
Can you kind of play them more than once, or are they one and done, right? Because the jump scares are what it's all about.
No, because you can make choices. Like, do you turn around or do you not turn around? That sort of thing. I think it's one of these ones where, because you're going through the game, and you're actually going reasonably quickly through the game.
Yeah.
I would say, like, in 3 or 4 years, you could come back to it. It would all be fresh, and you would still probably fall into the same pitfalls and still, you know, do the same things that would mess you up.
Yeah.
I think it has a New Game Plus version.
Nice.
There's something else you can do to mess around with it. That being said, I bought Layers of Fear 2, which I like less. It's set on a ship. There is a plot going on in the background. So what is it you called those games where you sort of wander and you get the story told to you?
I don't know. Walking simulators?
Walking
visual novels?
Simulators.
Walking novels?
It's not too far off a walking simulator. But at the same time, it's set on this 50s style cruise ship, which can go a little dark at places, and then everything's about the performances of actors and things like that. So there's a plot going on there, and where there were actors and scenes that are being played out, that are being said out loud and spoken to you whilst you're walking around the ship, you would see, like, mannequins take up those places and recreate those scenes.
Nice.
And of course, the mannequins, you turn your head, they move.
But
you don't know where they moved, and there's lots of stuff like that. However, didn't grab me. The jump scares felt a little predictable in it.
Yeah.
I think Layers of Fear 1 just sort of nailed it, and Layers of Fear 2 tried to cash in on it. You know what I mean?
Kind of a familiar thing with those kind of horror games.
Or sequels in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, that's true. Okay. Just firmly Layers of Fear, no honorable mentions.
Oh, yeah, no, I have other honorable mentions. The other one that I want to highlight again is Fatal Frame.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is probably one of my favorite scary games that, and it falls firmly into the Silent Hill sort of, I'm too scared to want to play this game. I need to play this with someone else in the room.
Yeah.
So that I can, you know, hold their hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll and need a just, cuddle and, after you know, playing one yeah. level, you know?
And a nervous laugh.
Or just straight up screaming. But yeah, I don't know if we've really gone over Fatal Frame. The whole concept of this is you can walk around a mansion, and you, when you look through your camera viewfinder, can see ghosts. So yeah, you actually actively have to sort of give yourself that claustrophobia of looking through this little lens.
It's such a brilliant mechanic, because not only does it cut off all your vision, but you quite literally have to stare what you least want to look at in the face, right? And wait for it to get close as well, because that's how you do the most damage, is when you take photos of it when it's right up in your face. Brilliant.
Or doing a certain action. Yeah.
And I think because most of them are in a Japanese setting.
Yeah.
And they just have the best ghosts, I think.
Yeah.
And that interplay between ghost and setting, and you know, why you end up being a ghost, and ghost and suicide, and then I mentioned it on previous podcasts, there's a really good Japanese ghost stories written by an Irish Japanese.
Yeah, writer. You did talk about this, yeah.
So he kind of reimagines, as well as picks up these folk Japanese stories, and they're just so fucking brutal. They always end up with, you know, and then they found her the next day and her head was torn off. You know, with some moral lesson in there, like, you know, don't look at the sun when it's setting on a certain time of year. So something about the foreignness, I guess, of the ghost stories that really works, or helps to add to it. But which Fatal Frame are you talking about? Because there's a gazillion, and the availability over here has been patchy in the past.
The Fatal Frame that I'm talking about that I played was on the GameCube, and I couldn't even tell you what one it was. I just played through it, borrowed it from a friend, and I think we played it together because I was too scared of it anyway. it was just such a great concept. I loved it and hated it at the same time. I have been following the Fatal Frame that has come out recently on Steam.
Oh yeah.
And apparently it is a port from the Wii U.
Yeah, the Wii U version was kind of wild because I think we got it really, really late, and it was so big. If you didn't have extended storage, it was like the only game you could have on your Wii U.
No way.
Yeah. So I never played it as much as I wanted to. And that's one with two. That's the one with two girls. And it's also, they're also a spirit in Super Smash Brothers.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And the level to beat them is brilliant because I think it's Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah.
It's the assist trophy, which is, you know, you get the big Fatal Frame camera moving around, and if it snaps you, you freeze in place. I can't remember who would be two good Smash Bros. Characters to be the Japanese schoolgirls. Let me look it up.
I'm going to guess it's one of the squid people that you like.
Oh, yeah, because they have like a little squid. There's Splatoon.
Splatoon, thank you.
Because there's one of them has a schoolgirl outfit. Oh my god, Fatal Frame Universe. Smash Brothers Ultimate. it doesn't say. Damn it. Annoying.
Okay.
Use that opportunity to log into Super Smash Bros. Ultimate and play the Fatal Frame Spirit Trophy if you care.
Yeah. Exactly. But I'm not doing that right now.
No,
let's not look this up. Right, okay, cool. And I think the final one, probably the same one as you, I've mentioned it 20 times already. I'm just going to do a nod to all of the Silent Hill series because, as a horror genre, I really like the psychological play. I like the weird demon enemies. I love the switching from real world to the fake world, or the rusty, bloody world. And, of course, there's always a plot line heavily centered around guilt of some kind. And then just... yeah, the weirdness and the overtly sexualness that they add in as well. You know, the noises that they make, the enemies when you shoot them, and like the scenes are like, is it, what's going on there? It's legs and you, it's all very weird and creepy and primal. And yeah, I think it's a very special series and does terrify you as well.
Yes, yeah. Gotten somewhat worse with later iterations trying to tie it all into the single events of one of the games. I think one of my of that entire series, really, we talked about a million times, really, really love The Room.
Yep.
Such a good entry. And as ever, I think my favorite is still Silent Hill Shattered Memories on the Wii, because you do you remember this? You beginning of each chapter, you're visiting your therapist and he gives you stuff to do, and then depending on what you do, that changes the story. So in one of the tests is, you know, what lessons did you enjoy at school? So you pick the lessons which you enjoyed, and then that determines the layout of the school, and you go to the school, or you color in a house, and then at some point you go to a place that you think's your home, and it's the same color as the house. It's very cool. yeah, themed around ice.
Yeah, and it's nice that you sort of like almost answering these psychological questions is really sort of impacting the game as well. Yeah.
Yeah. They famously kind of, you know, said this game, the tagline was something like, this game plays you as much as you play it.
Yeah. Because you can choose the color of a house.
yeah, you can ever so slightly change it. But it was a cool feature to introduce. And then interestingly, which I think split people who played the game, when you go to the other world, in this one it's frozen, so everything
kind of, everything's a bit more blue rather than red,
encrusts with rime and grows over, and there's some really good like they look like scenes with mannequins, and you have to go and photograph things with your phone camera in order to change events. There's ghosts which are hidden around as well, which you can only see through your phone, a bit like Fatal Frame.
Yeah.
But there was no combat. You could only run away from these like baby spirits that would endlessly chase after you. There was no kind of fighting, and that worked so much better than it should have done, I think. Because yeah, you're helpless. You just have to run, run. Really, really cool entry. But I think the game that has most terrified me is probably Alien Isolation.
Oh God, yeah, that's a very good shout. Yes.
I wish I'd recorded myself playing it, just and then, you know, doing a time lapse, just to see how much in that game I spent crouched under a desk.
Yeah. Now listen, I fully get you. I've only ever seen the trailer. I haven't done like long plays. I own Alien Isolation. I watched the trailer and I was like, this is not a game for me. No. So horrible.
It's very, very good. I still haven't finished it. Again, I have to really get into a mindset to play it, but it's in, you know, it's not just for me, it's not just terrifying because there's a big scary alien and it's really high, you don't really stand much of a chance of you know, warding it off, let alone killing it until the story I imagine lets you, but it's because you can't really predict its behavior, and I just love, yeah, I just love that idea. You know, it's not like you can, as we've said many times on the podcast, sometimes once you see behind the Emerald Curtain, right, okay, yeah, here's how this game works, so, you know, I can always, like in Silent Hill, what's the one where they have the twin baby gorilla guys?
That's Silent Hill 4.
Is it this 4? Yeah. You know, that if I run at them and lean to the right. Lean to the right when they do their attack. I can squeeze past them, right?
Yeah.
In this one, it's like I don't know where it's going to be. You know, there's no sense of, oh, here's a safe room, or I'll just do this, and you're just petrified of making a noise or interact with the environment. Really, really good. And I was thinking of this recently, actually, so it's very timely. I've been reading a compilation of sci-fi by this author called Greg Egan, who's an Australian author and is a he writes hard sci-fi. He's a mathematician. So, you know, everything, lots of his stories are based on mathematical concepts or equations or algorithms gone wrong or arithmetic going wrong. Really, really, really good writer. But one of his short stories, there's two of them, is about essentially a video game that uses public data from people's brain scans to essentially use that information to, you know, populate the world with NPCs.
Okay.
So they're not real people, and they're kind of based on the combined memories of lots of different people, but to varying degrees they're aware that they're in a video game, and that they can be deleted, and sometimes customers come through, and that's a really, really good idea. And yeah, it's a good story. I was thinking about that when you were talking one of the games you were talking about where everyone's actors and they're replaced by mannequins.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a game out there like this, or a couple of games out there like this. It'd be really interesting to have a kind of horror game where, you know, as you were rounding a corner, you caught NPCs talking to each other as if they were aware that they're in a video game. Right?
Yeah, that whole meta.
They have to put on a show for you, and, you know, something's going on here. It's not just a normal video game.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of.
Sort of like Free Guy, the horror movie.
Yes, yeah. In game form, you know. Just
yeah.
Eavesdropping on NPCs talking about them being trapped in this game world.
Yeah, and if they could convince you that the self-awareness of them, maybe actions that you've done before, they talk about, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm already creeped out thinking about that, man.
Yeah. It's just sat on the title screen, like, yeah, maybe not.
I wonder why he spent so long on the title screen. Yeah. Than the NPCs. Yeah. Mentions. Oh, man. Right.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, like I say, I'm sure there's some, you know, low-budget Czech horror demo-type games which already play on this idea. And then we've got stuff like Stanley Parable, which is kind of getting there, right? In
terms of it's kind of a horror movie thing.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, Doki Doki.
I thought we were gonna get away.
I never even thought about it, but yeah, that was scary on a different level. Really, really fun. Yeah. Oh wow.
I've still not played it.
Obviously. Yeah, I mean, like, I think you need to find it on your own accord. My recommendation.
I think what we need to do is one weekend hire some kind of cottage which has, you know, two TV screens, and you play Resident Evil Revelation on one screen, and I'll play Doki Doki Literature Club on the other screen.
Oh, man. Yeah, sure, I'm in.
Okay, great. Let's get that in the diary.
Did they make a Resident Evil Revelations?
Two of them, would you believe?
Right, okay. So I think that's it for our honorable mentions of terrifying games. Yeah, pretty much this week's podcast. But maybe we have time for one more question.
Maybe we do.
So I'll pass it over to you.
Thank you. This is a question I've been thinking about a lot, and I'm not really happy with my answer.
Yeah, I know. Me neither.
It's a big one, but it's all, at the same time, it's a simple one, and it's you initially think it's a no-brainer or it's really boring.
It is really boring.
Richie Cunningham, what is your favorite video game?
Oh my god! Like, we've actually talked about this on previous podcasts. My answer doesn't change. I gain a lot of satisfaction and enjoyment from it, and it's Super Mario World.
have we done favorite video games before?
Yeah, well, I think we did the Desert Island games.
Yeah, we did.
And I think I went at length and talked about this. And I think we've actually done an episode. Well, first of all, we've done an episode where we play Super Mario World, one of our first video ones.
First podcast, which is a video.
Yeah, and I think there has been multiple instances through the remainder of our podcast, through our nearly 100 episodes.
Yeah.
Where I have talked about Super Mario World and how it is such a game changer. Hey, for me.
Okay, but okay, to dial down the cynicism of it and the self-depreciation, which of course we have to, you know, we're culturally mandated to.
Yeah, British. To, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's no way of getting past it. It's particularly because we talk about something we enjoy.
And also we're overqualified as well.
You know, and what if somebody else thinks our choice is bad, they can't take the piss out of us because we've done it first. Why, after all the hundreds of hours of video games of all kinds of flavors and genres, and from your Guitar Heroes to VR, from MMOs to puzzle games, why is that still your favorite? What components make it your favorite? Is it just gameplay mechanics, but is it also, you know, history, setting, nostalgia, the time when you were playing it? What are those elements which keep it, you know, because you've not changed your mind since we've been recording this podcast, what keeps it as your favorite game, and what would it take to not replace it, but, you know,
I mean, there are other very, very, very close contenders, and I think you've hit the nail on the head that there is definitely a level of nostalgia in there.
Yeah.
But I think it's because not only is it a lot of nostalgia, but it is probably one of the games that I one of the first games that I 100%ed.
Uh-huh.
And by that I mean I did everything, I got everything. There are still things to find as well, which is fun in that. But it also is a little bit like when you go back to it, it's sort of like it takes a little while. It's not like riding a bike. It takes a little while to get into the rhythm, remember, okay. But I have so much muscle memory and so much almost pixel perfect like knowledge of like exactly when you can fly, why you should fly here, and I think it becomes an exercise of probably ego to go back and do it and remember all this stuff and be able to do it as well. And I think so I think the investment that I put into this as a teenage Richie, I still have and feel to this day. Along with that, there's so much in this game that I just thoroughly enjoy as well. The secrets that exist, the setting, the music, it was so different from a Mario game, and that zeitgeist when it came out has just never left me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it's leading me to my next kind of question is, yeah, because obviously there are sequels, depending on how you view the Mario games. There are, you know, there's a diverging path of sequels, depending on if you like 3D games or kind of new Super Mario Brothers, and then things get a bit meta with them. It's like Mario Maker. But I get the sense that, you know, obviously none of these, because it's your favorite, none of these have kind of toppled that, or perhaps done something, you know, if we're just thinking about video games and their sequels as purely, hey, here's that thing that you liked, but it's, you know, it's bigger, or the graphics are nicer, or, you know, there's hundreds of enemies on the screen as before. But obviously none of that improvement has, do you get what I mean? It seemed to be like a special combination of one, the slight weirdness of it, you know, it's a bit like Mario Brothers 2
in
Power Territories, in that it's like a weird game, right? And there's lots of shit that just appears in that one game that you never see ever again.
Yep.
From power-ups to enemies to gimmicks, you name it. So how come, how come there isn't a sequel to this, which is more, or, you know, is it just because, is there something unique about it or standalone in the Mario game pantheon that, that...
Well, there have been sequels to it. So directly, the sequel that came after it was Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island.
Yeah, which is loved by many, right?
Yeah.
That's not the crap one.
It's a good game.
Is it
a sequel to Mario World 2?
Frequently. No. Near the top of best game ever lists.
Yeah. But it is not a sequel to Mario World.
Mm-hmm.
Not in any fashion. Not in any... it's its own standalone separate thing.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know, and that's fine, but you... calling it a sequel, calling it Super Mario World 2, I'm sure that there's fucking headcanon for a lot of people that make that a sequel, but it is not, and it, like, I would definitely contest that. I think there is so many weird things in Mario World, as you were sort of saying, grabbing a feather and you get a cape, and that cape, the concept of a cape spinning and hitting an enemy with a spinning cape, you know, that is your attack as well. Like, and, there's so much about it. Even just that weirdness of actually flying with Mario.
Yeah.
Like, the tipping forward and the pulling back and getting the sort of parachute air and then learning how to sort of almost constantly fly like an infinity machine sort of thing. Sort of keeping that sort of bounce going.
But then also using the Mario Maker 2. Maybe the original Mario Maker. I forget. One of them gave you the tools from Super Mario World.
Yeah, I think it's a sequel. The first one didn't really.
Mario Maker 2. Those, if you went to kind of, you know, the level store in inverted commas, from, you know, some of the most popular levels or some of the famously just difficult levels, all of the hardest ones are with the Super Mario World tool set, you know, power ups, enemies, and stuff, just because the cape just gave you so much flexibility. You know, there were things you could do, to get like a couple of frames of invincibility, so you can do the spin and then you bounce off. You've also got like crazy stuff that you can do with throwing stuff vertically.
Yep.
Just this loads of this complexity, which you didn't need to beat the game, but in order to kind of master it or get, you know, all the coins or some of those Star World levels, it just gave this really broad tool set from, you know, on the surface, Mario platforms, things in boxes.
And I mean, I think the nuances that you got from that game, it kind of has sort of the Goat Simulator effect. A lot of these, I don't think, were intentionally programmed, you know. These things came out of the game, and I think there are people who get into speedrunning and take advantage of bugs and stuff like that. I kind of feel like this was my only really dipping my toe into that. You know, it was more because I enjoyed the game so much and I found these things. Like, I can't go past a fruit in a tree without having a Yoshi and getting two coins out of it instead of just one, you know? Because I'm, you know, like, I'm so conditioned. And I think... going back and revisiting and seeing those conditioned things happen, and like, I think when we were playing it, I was showing you like the first castle and just like, hey, just keep climbing, and if you never touch the ground, you're just gonna get one ups and one ups and one ups forever. You know, like that sort of stuff. That's, you know, the silly things. But as you go further on into the game, or at least some of the things I was trying on Star Road, it's so hard. Like, that game is so hard, yet it's still a challenge. Like, you remember how horrible that level was with the jumping. You did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's other ones where you have to get the pea balloon, where you float and there's literally nothing but enemies until you can find another pea balloon, and then there's more enemies until you can find another pea balloon. Balloon, what a name. There must be a better name for it.
There's also, I think, elements which are very richy. I'd say they're richy elements. Like, it doesn't really dictate how you play it, right? So it's like, hey, if you fancy, you can just keep coming back to this bonus level, right?
Yeah.
Rinsing it for one-ups and power-ups and then leaving. We're not going to stop you from doing that. We're not going to put a limit on doing that. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. And I think that kind of stuff really appeals to you, right?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, just like to sort of practice and, you know, get really
good. I can
really
optimize. Or I can optimize, or, like, you know, stock up, which gives it a little bit more... gives it a little bit more kind of freedom in how you play it, I guess, or approach it.
Yeah, and, like, there is an optimal way to approach it. If you want to speedrun, or if you want to do all 96, or, like, anything else like that. I mean, like, yeah, and it's been a while, and each time I come back to it, I revisit the challenge, but there are little moments of my muscle memory just kicking in, like the whole double coins with the Yoshi and stuff like that, where it's just like, right, okay, this is me, this is the thing I'm going to do, and, like, stuff like when we were playing, and I went and got the key because I knew the secret to the level. I knew how to get that secret because I needed to keep the cape till X point, and I knew how to keep it cape because I knew where all the enemies fucking were. You know? It's silly. But yeah, like, I dig that. And there's other stuff, like the getting the different coloured Yoshis and keeping a blue Yoshi for X amount of time, or knowing that in the next level you're going to have to ditch that blue Yoshi because you can't complete the level with with a blue Yoshi on there, you know?
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. And yeah, I have a lot of fun with that and getting to certain levels. There's even a level I still don't fully understand. And anyone who's ever played Super Mario World will probably be in a similar position. There's one level on Chocolate Island. And basically, when you get to the end of what feels like the level, but it's just a very, very short section, it depends on the number in your score, the number of coins you've collected, or the number of Yoshi coins you've collected, as to what the next phase of that level will be. And it keeps on going like that, and you have to do something or just keep progressing until you randomly find the end of the level. And sometimes you'll come back to the start and have to go through it again. And I still don't fully understand how. I just luck and persistence that level and get past it, because you never need to do it again. But yeah, it's a weird one, and I've never bothered to, like, look up exactly what the optimal route is. And I think that's the other thing with Mario as well. This was sort of, it wasn't pre-internet, but it was pre going and looking stuff up on the internet.
Yeah, do you know what, man, I was gonna, it was in my list of my developing list of things to talk to you about. I think that's an important element of it, because these days it's kind of embarrassing, particularly because we're old fucking men and we can't just sit around playing video games all the time. It's like, I could spend, you know, 20% of my gaming time this week trying to work out this thing, or I could just fucking look it up in seconds because I've only got so many hours to play. But I think that in the same way that binging box sets and you know, just guzzling content, like,
it's so much easier just to get a YouTube video of exactly how to get past that thing.
Diminishes the experience. But I do think, because I remember playing, I think it was there's loads of Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games which got me through some tough fucking spots in my life. But at some point in my life, all I had was, I think it was Super Mario Land 2,
the six golden coins,
maybe. Ooh. or maybe another one. Anyway, that's all I had. No access to the internet. Literally nothing else to do but play that. And the satisfaction and fondness for that game because...
You worked it out. You did it. Yeah. You couldn't write a guide about it, but you know in your soul that you can still play those bits and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
I had a similar thing with Wario Land. Did you play Wario Land Super Mario Land 3?
It's a throwback to a previous episode where neither of us were getting that.
We've already talked about this. I thought so. Yeah,
Super Mario Land 3
is the Game Boy ones.
Land 3, Wario Land, Super Mario Land 3. Yes, love that game. Oh my gosh.
And so he's got like the jet and the bull, and he's also got these secret levels where the whole point is to collect all of the treasures. I just remember, I think it was the second treasure. I spent so long hunting in those levels, trying to find where that secret treasure was. But
yes,
it wasn't
because you can see. I think you can see from the overworld map, right? That there is a treasure and you haven't got it. So you knew it was there, right? You could narrow it down to, I've not got something here. Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I love Wario Land, and I've gone back to play it, and I think it's still a very, very solid game, but it suffers from really shit graphics as well. Like, I would love to see that overhauled. Same mechanics, same everything. Sort of like Diablo 2 Remaster, you know what I mean? Where you can see the old version and still...
flick a button to see the Game Boy,
Yeah, and whereas instead just have some sort of like Paper Mario styly, pretty version of Wario Land. That would be so good. I could happily play through that again. It's just when you go back and play, even if you play it on an emulator, which has special filters to make it prettier, it's still pretty dodgy, and like enemies go half missing and big, because there were big sprites, you know?
Yes, there were certain, I remember, particularly if you're doing his, ball dash all over the plot.
Or the jet dash.
There'd be scan line issues, or I guess not scan line issues, whatever the Game Boy equivalent.
Well, I know exactly. It was really, really putting the Game Boy graphics to their limits, as it were.
Yeah.
But even, as I said, even in emulation, that struggles because it's, you know.
Have you played it on the, with using a Game Boy, Super Game Boy?
Yes, and in fact, I played it in through entirely on the Game Boy Color on the Super NES.
Nice.
Yeah. I didn't get a Game Boy until after that and was able to then play it. But yeah, it was, I think it was basically, I got the Super Game Boy because I really, really enjoyed Super Mario World.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, I'm going to get a Super Game Boy, and I got Super Mario Land 2 and Super Mario Land because they were my spiritual sequels to those games.
Yes.
Super Mario Land 2, however, is hard and horrible. Wario Land's a bit more forgiving.
Yeah, Super Mario Land 2 is fucking hard.
Yeah.
But at least it's slightly saner than Super Mario Land 2.
Slightly. Right, now, I need to stop talking about Super Mario World and things like that.
Can we just quickly reminisce about how in Super Mario Land you fly a UFO and it becomes a side-scrolling shooter at some point?
Sure.
Great. Mentioned.
Good. Right, now, Farley.
Yeah.
What is your favorite game of all time?
It depends. I did a lot.
Only one.
Did a lot of soul searching because there are games which have really good memories of, and that's partly due to when I was playing them, who I was playing them with, what was happening at the time. There's some kind of unique experiences. Shout outs to when we managed to catch a 100 versus 1. So yeah. Good. But I think, and so you're thinking about my favorite game of all time, and it's not even the game that I've spent the most time with. It's not even a game I've replayed more than once. But it is, I'll have to look up the name.
What? You don't even know the name of the game?
Oh, well, I went to get the name. I'm having a brain fart. Surely that's the name.
Yeah, it's okay. It's not like somebody else completely forgot one of the names of his games earlier.
It is Pokemon Channel for the Nintendo GameCube.
Okay. Was that genuinely your favorite game?
Yeah, I think so.
Was it a game?
Well, this is... So, I have fond memories of the GameCube, as I'm sure I bored everybody with many times before, because I was having a rough time in my life. It was beyond the end of the GameCube's life span. And I saw the Pokemon Colosseum bundle on sale in my local game. Brand new. Black GameCube, very cool. Came with a controller and Pokemon Channel and Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire box. So I just have these really fond memories of playing it on a CRT. And that's when I guess, really got into the interconnectivity between the Pokemon games. And that's where they really went mad for it, because Ruby and Sapphire came out, and then
yeah.
You could link to Colosseum, Colosseum 2, Channel, Box. And so I picked up GameCube. Do you remember? I distinctly remember it was hard to buy GameCube games in this country.
Yeah.
At the height of the GameCube's popularity, they were just so rare in shops, rarer than it ever was, I think, with the Wii U. There's no like depth to the catalog. And so I used to trawl these indie game shops. Do you remember indie game shops?
Yeah.
They existed. Just finding gems like Pokemon Channel and Rogue Squadron and the Metroids, because you just couldn't kind of get them. And this was really pre like internet shopping as well. So that's a bit of a crapshoot too. So anyway, ended up chancing upon Pokemon Channel, thinking, oh yeah, there's a mythical Pokemon that you get if you play through this game, Jirachi, right? You have to connect the GBA connector and Pokemon Sapphire, and you download a Jirachi. Hurrah! So I thought, I'll struggle through this game. You know, I've struggled through Colosseum and Colosseum 2.
A struggle. Really, really was a struggle. I had those Colosseum games, and it's not that they're shit games.
Yeah.
It's that you have to fight the same Pokemon over
and
over again.
Man, it's Ludicolo. So slow.
You're
telling me I've recently, as you know, had to play through the 100 Battle Tower challenge 3 times for this ribbon thing. It is slow. It's a handful of Pokemon. Anyway, so for those of you who don't know, in Pokemon Channel, you share a house with this Pikachu. And all you do is watch TV. So you're kind of stuck in this room. You can leave the room. And as you watch TV, there are different locations for you to go to. You kind of unlock different channels. You also unlock just shit for your room. There's plushies and boxes. And then there's also collectible cards. And then there's also the... Pokemon Mini. You can unlock all of those Pokemon Mini games, which I still haven't done after how many hundreds of hours of playing. And then there's also a film. There's a Pokemon film in there. And I'm not too sure how robust this is, but when I played it, it really felt like this. As you watch TV with Pikachu, your Pikachu kind of develops a bit of a personality. he has his... He's got the he tail. Although I think it's before they had he and she tails. So who knows? Could be it. They. Your Pikachu develops habits. So, you know, you're desperately trying to watch through this short film on there, which is split into different pieces. You have to unlock all these different pieces, and then when watch the whole thing through, that's when Jirachi appears, and you can download it to your game. But then for whatever reason, he'll keep changing back to the Slowpoke Weather Channel, right? And the Slowpoke Weather Channel is just a Slowpoke.
that's all. You don't need to say it anymore.
Yeah, brilliant. Then there's the news channel with Meowth, and I think one of the brilliant things about Pokemon, which is probably a big part. Yeah, I still find it funny. I've been watching the anime recently, the new series, of the anime, that the Pokemon can only kind of say their names.
Yeah,
with some exceptions. And so you watch there's a Wobbuffet game show. Wobbuffet's the host, and obviously all Wobbuffet can say is Wobbuffet, right? And Wobbuffet and Buffet. Yeah, and it's just brilliant. You really kind of bond with this Pikachu. There's a shopping channel as well, so occasionally rare things come up from the shopping channel. Like if you wanted a TV in the shape of a Smoochum head, you can get that. If you want different kind of plushies, at any point in the game, you can kind of take a screenshot and then you can color it in, and then Smeargle will review it on like a Tony Hart like art channel. So you can, you know, pause it during a bit in the film and draw huge penises on all the Pokemon, and then Smeargle will review your painting called Pichu's Cock or whatever. And then you can put that painting on your wall. You can also leave the house, and occasionally it behooves you to leave the house because you'll see on the news channel, which is hosted by Meowth, that there's a particular Pokemon hanging around, and you go and chat to them. And you'll unlock their Pokedex entry, and they'll give you some of these trading cards. Although I only bought it to kind of cynically burn through it to get Jirachi, which I still have kicking around and think very fondly of, it was just a game that spoke directly to all the kind of things that I like. I really like, as you know, as listeners, as readers of the podcast will know, games which are kind of a bit quirkier and perhaps aren't a simple, you know, not simple, but like a standard, you know, you start here and you finish here. It's nice and relaxing, but there's lots of different stuff to do. And you do kind of develop a relationship with this Pikachu, who is, you know, has not a huge amount, but every now and then he'll do something to surprise you, like hide, or you find him asleep in a cupboard, or he's chatting to whatever another Pokemon that turns up. And like I say, I end up putting over, you know, end up getting the Jirachi and then putting way, way, way more time into it. Sometimes just to watch, there's a channel called, I think it's called the Mareep channel, and you just count Mareep jumping.
Oh my god, that's genius. Pokemon sleep. Is that ever going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. They're still not saying anything about it. And then you can unlock, I think you can unlock like Spanish versions of this film, should you want to. Some of the TVs come with different filters. You know, Pikachu can go out and you get buses to various places and chats to various Pokemon. It's just brilliant. And it's one of those I quite like. I quite like those games which add to the world of Pokemon rather than just being like RPGs with their battle things. And lots of spin-offs kind of do. But yeah, Pokemon Channel is the one I'm kind of most fond about. So when I thought about it and was thinking about games which I really like, games which I've spent the most time on, games which have special memories, for other reasons, it really was sitting on my own. Like way over the target audience age, I think, by the time I was playing it. After the GameCube's life cycle. I'm just really, really enjoying it. Just really enjoying sitting, watching stupid TV with Pikachu. Partly because of these random elements that go on. It's just, there's a kind of some absurdity to it as well. So when you watch the quiz show channel, you get a chance to answer the quiz questions as you go along to win prizes.
Are they all Pokemon related questions?
They're all Pokemon related questions, yeah. Cool. Sometimes Pikachu will make a suggestion, right? And sometimes it'll be wrong. but he has a, he, Pikachu, she, they, has reactions to what's going on TV, which is just absolutely adorable. So, you know, if it thinks one of the questions to one of these Wob Effect quizzes is this, and you choose it and it's wrong, it will be surprised or it'll be super happy if it gets it. But also, at the same time, there are three Pokemon taking part in this quiz.
So I'm guessing they're like behind the stand, so you've got like a Hitmonchan ready to sort of press a buzzer.
Yes. So you've got three, like a panel show, you've got three little booths. And depending on how well they do, you know, the platform rises up, and so sometimes they win, sometimes I think there must always be a winner. But yeah, so essentially you're watching, you know, like a really, obviously really limited AI TV show as well at the same time.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, it's that kind of stuff which really
resonates.
Yeah, resonates. It really, really releases those nice endorphins. And, you know, like I say, there's still got loads of the Pokemon mini games to unlock. And those are brilliant, genuinely brilliant. I think one of my favorite, second favorite game is one of those games. I think it's something like Snorlax's Lunch, and it's really, really simple. A Pichu will put a piece of fruit in front of Snorlax. You press A to eat it. Something puts some food there, and occasionally they'll put a Pichu there, and if you press A when there's a Pichu there, you lose the game.
Wow.
And the game is to get as high as possible, but you have to do it quickly. So there's like a timer bar which goes down quickly every time you do it. Brilliant. I've spent evenings playing that competitively with friends. And that's just a sub game within this game that you end up buying from the shopping channel.
Brilliant.
You can garden with him. You can look at snowballs. It's and there's a whole film in there.
What is the film of? Is it like an anime, or is it actually just a?
We know, and they stopped doing this, and I'm really angry. I think they did it. Maybe they still do it in Japan. Pokemon films, when they hit the cinema, used to come with a little film beforehand.
One of those ones. Yeah.
Most people, if they remember, it'll be I think it's Pikachu's Vacation, which was before the first movie. And then the second movie was something about the Pichu brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
They live in this scrapyard and they end up going to some picnic. So it's a sort of a sequel to those. It's called Pichu Bros in Party Panic. The end of that, if you're a particular fan of
the Pichu Brothers
Pokemon trivia, Pokemon Cinematic Universe trivia, the end of that is this really strange there's some shenanigans about them having to get an invite or get some fruit to get an invite to go to a party. Team Rocket's Pokemon are there, for example. They go through all kinds of shenanigans, a fight with a Murkrow, and you unlock this film in chunks by doing various bits. I think like ordering through the shopping channel, maybe characters give you bits, and then once you get all of them you can watch it as one continuous thing. That's what triggers Jirachi. But the end of that film, when they get, spoilers for Pichu Brothers in Party Panic in case you still had intention of buying Pokemon Channel and playing it all the way through, is this really strange CG animation of Meowth and other Pokemon in a band, and it's quite well-known animation, because I think it was something like it was used in a demo reel when the game, what was the code name for the GameCube?
Dolphin.
When the Dolphin demo reel, so people were speculating that there was, you know, oh, it's a 3D animated Pokemon game, but it's not. It's just this strange CG ending to otherwise traditional animated film, and that's in there as well. What more could you want?
Good.
So there we go.
To be honest, I'm quite surprised that is your favorite game.
Since we've recorded last week, week before?
Last week, yeah.
I've been thinking extensively about it, staring at my backloggery did I like that? Yeah, I like that, but have, you know, has it made me think about it? Do I, you know, would I still like to? No, not really. No, yeah. And this is really the game that
I mean, I had a long think about it as well, and there's certain games that I've had experiences with, like on the Amiga, or have felt like a nostalgia with, or had good times with friends with.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking off the top of my head, like Soul Blade, things like that. But yeah, just like my favorite game that I can play with friends or with anyone else, that definitely ended up just at that one. I thought about things like Ocarina of Time, or spoilers, potentially another game, which is like, what game have you most revisited, and things like that. It's like I don't know. I think it was my initial gut instinct, which was Super Mario World, but then I was just like, yeah, like nothing else is hitting all of those marks. Mm-hmm. And nostalgia is unfortunately a very big scale tipper in that discussion as well.
Yeah, perhaps it's you know, a pattern with both of these games. We had time on our hands, you know, pre-internet, no guides to look up. Yeah, because in many ways, perhaps Pokemon Channel more than Super Mario World. You know, these games don't resemble anything in terms of what passes for a video game these days, right? Like games as a service, endless content, daily logins. I mean, I guess Pokemon Channel has some of that to start with. So yeah, interesting that for us, extra kind of processing power and graphical capacities
hasn't increased our, well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I think other responsibilities don't give us don't award us the time or ability to sink our teeth into a game as much as we perhaps could do in the past.
But even then, I don't, you know, there's not much that grabs me really, or makes me think like that.
I'm not going to go into the philosophy of it. I think we should round this episode off.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next time with more questions. Or maybe not. It might be something different, depending on our chronology. Okay. That guy's a maniac.
We've been your terrifying favourites.
We've been your regular guys.